So let's start by almost the beginning, source number one. V'yigadlu ha-ne'arim, v'yi esav ish yodei etzayid, ish sadeh, v'yatov ishtam yoshev ohalim. And the young men, the boys, grew up, and Esav was a man who knew hunting, a man of the field. Yaakov was a simple man who sat in tents. So there is a slight lack of symmetry, even though you feel symmetry here, between, on the one hand, the ish yodei etzayid versus the ish tam, the hunter versus the simple man, and then you have the man of the field versus the man of the tents. Of course, the lack of symmetry, because it doesn't say man of the tents. It just says yoshev ohalim. So does that suggest that within Yaakov, maybe it's not so simple that he is definitively a man of the tents, or he's somebody who happens to be in the tents? Do you understand that point? Maybe? Okay. If he's exclusively one of tents, or if he is, if just happens to be in tents, though it's not all that he is.
Are you comparing him to Yitzchak?
I don't know what I'm doing yet. Give me a couple seconds. Ve'yehav Yitzchak et Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because, you know, tzayid b'fiv has a simple meaning. The simple meaning is that he provided him with food. He filled his mouth with the food. Rivka hevet et Yaakov, and Rivka loves Yaakov. So clearly we have over here a family that is somewhat dysfunctional. Aside from the fact of one parent liking one child, we won't tell them, and another parent liking another child, what we have over here is, aside from that, the love that Yitzchak has towards Esav is one which is talui b'davar. It's one which is conditional, or it's one which has a rationale for it, and that strikes us a little strange. If I were to ask you why you're like your child, you would most likely say, because it's my child. You're not going to start thinking about the utility, about what your child does for you. Oh, I like him because he takes out the garbage. I mean, I'm not minimizing taking out the garbage, but that does not seem to be enough of a reason to love a child. So this seems a little bit strange. Rashi gives us two different interpretations for Sayyid Bifiv, or Ish Sayyid, between the two different verses. If you look at Rashi in source number two, where it says, Vayigadlu ha-na'arim vayi Esav. So first of all, Rashi tells us something that we perhaps did not notice. Kol zman shayu ktanim, lo hayu nikarim b'ma'aseyim. When they were young, people could not tell the difference between them in terms of their behavior. Ve'ein adam adakdek v'hem mativam, and no one noticed them in terms of their qualities. Kevin shenasu v'nei shlosh esrei, once they became bar mitzvah, right, and this is an obvious bar mitzvah talk, right? One became involved, Rashi tells us, in the Batei Midrashot, presumably of Shem Ve'ever, and the other becomes involved in idolatry. All of you know that Rashi already told us earlier that in utero they were already going in different directions, which is a little strange. That there seems to be this predisposition towards going in different directions. Nonetheless, it's not manifest until 13 years later. There seems to be some kind of delay in this predisposition. And it wasn't until the age of 13 that they go in different ways. Yodeya Tzayid, Rashi writes, Latsud v'liramot et aviv b'fiv, that he fooled his father. He hunted his father. He fooled his father. To Ramai, deceived his father. V'sho'alo, and he asked him, Abba, heich ma'asrin et ha-melach ve'et ha-tevin. How do you take ma'aser, how do you take a tenth out of salt or out of tevin is hay? Kasuver aviv shehu medaktek mitzvot. And his father therefore believed that he was very medaktek by mitzvot. And by the way, anybody who reads this Rashi has to be perturbed why Rashi chose these two cases, or this particular area of being of taking both ma'aser out of all the things that are possible. By the way, who is the first one that we find in the Chumash that actually says that he will take ma'aser? Yaakov, when Yaakov ends up leaving, and he says to God, "Whatever you give me, I will give it. I will give a tenth." Correct? So Yaakov is actually the one who is involved in Maaser in the Pshat in the Chumash. Esav, on the other hand, is somebody, according to Rashi, talks about Maaser, but he talks about Maaser in terms of Tevin, in terms of Melach, salt and hay, and this is something which is somewhat elusive, why this was chosen as an example. But over here, Rashi does understand this idea of Tzayid, that he hunted his father, that he abused, he took advantage of his father, he fooled his father, and that's what it means Tzayid B'Fiv. Nonetheless, in the very next verse, where it says, excuse me, Ish Yodea Tzayid, he's a man who knew how to hunt. Nonetheless, in the next verse, when it says, when it talks about Tzayid B'Fiv, in source 3, Rashi writes, Ketar Gumo B'Fiv Shel Yitzchak, that he gave food to his father. That's pshat. That's what it means. Where Rashi refers back to the first interpretation that he had in the previous verse, that Yitzchak was somebody who was, that Esav was somebody who was deceitful. So, there is a subtext over here that we really should be paying attention to, that in case we haven't identified it yet, let's try to notice it. Over here we have Esav using words, and the way that he uses words, we're being told by the Midrash and by Rashi that he is being abusive, he's being deceitful, and he misuses his words. Now, as far as somebody being deceitful, there are different ways to be deceitful. The obvious way to be deceitful is to say something that you know is not true. Correct? You say something which is not true and you mislead somebody. What's the other way to be deceitful? The other way to be deceitful is to fool yourself as well. And to ask certain questions, perhaps. Meaning, I know that you that we like to vilify Esav, and we try to make him as bad as we can. Correct? This is part of our mandate, is to make Esav look as bad as we can possibly do. But I want to ask you this question about Esav. When he asked his father, at least according to Rashi, about salting, about taking Maaser from salt or from hay. Was it that he was saying this on purpose to fool his father to think that he was so careful by mitzvot? Or was it that he said this because at the moment that he said it, he really believed it was a good question, but when it came to actually doing it is when he couldn't do it? Which means, what really is the problem with the words of Esav? Is it on purpose? Meaning, if you were to tell me that somebody like Lavan said something deceitful, I would not have any problem with that. That's what Lavan is. Lavan is somebody, you would not buy a used car from Lavan, right? He's a guy who will switch the price on you every single time. You finally agree on the price, then he'll switch the car on you. Right? You think you're getting a Rachel and you get a Leah. I mean, he is the kind of person who you cannot trust whatsoever. Is that really the feeling that we get from Esav when we read through all of the things? I mean, you look in the Chumash, do you see that about Esav? I didn't say anything. You can't disagree with me. Perhaps it's intentional. Nonetheless, there is at least one midrash that I was going to wait a little bit to get to. But if you're going to give me a hard time, then I'll mention it now already. The Midrash is mentioned in Source 20. Ukishaba'u. This is Pirkei Debilezer. This exists in a number of different versions. One of the more popular versions of it is actually in the Targum Yonatan on the Pasuk in Perek Nun in Bereshit, where it describes the death and the burial of Yaakov. Over here, I decided to spare you the Aramaic, and I know it's bad enough I'm giving you Hebrew, so I'll spare you the Aramaic. And there's also a couple of elements over here that I did want to, which are not in the other version, I want to stress. Ukishabo l'marata machpela, ba'leim esev mehachorev l'karchar riv v'amar shelihu marata machpela. When the time came to bring the remains of Yaakov up to the marata machpela to bury him, Esav shows up and says, "This really belongs to me." Ma'asa Yosef shalach l'chush mazlot l'ired l'mitrayim l'alot katav olam sh'hiya b'inam l'kach halach naftali, shahu, elash lucha, and so on. Which this means is that Esav comes, Esav starts talking, Esav starts claiming that really this belongs to him, really he is the one who should be receiving the Merat HaMachpelah. Which is very interesting, by the way. Because what is Esav using in this? Is he using force? Do you see soldiers about? Or do you see he's using his words? Okay, let's just make that observation. What Yosef then does is he sends down Naphtali. Naphtali is called Ayala Shlucha, Ariyahu sent. He sends, he's very quick, he's very swift. He goes run down to bring the contract, to bring the records in order to know who should be buried there. Hushim ben Dan, we're told, was one of Dan's sons, Yaakov's grandson. He was deaf. Haya pagum ba'azno, uvelashono, he was mute. Amar lehem rima anachni yoshvim kam, hareyu ba'etzmo, amar lo bishvil ha'ish hazeh, she'inu maniach oto l'kfor et Yaakov. Shalach et charbo, v'hitiz et rosho shel Esav. Right? He took his sword and he took off the head of Esav. I guess at that point he was brain dead. I know that there's been a lot of discussion recently to know exactly at which point.
It took
more time. It takes more time to plan an Arab funeral than a Haredi wedding. The Chassan will show up. They're there. Okay, the Chassan will show up. They'll make sure. So anyway, they. What's the French word for this? He was guillotined, right? I know it's a technical word. I'm sorry for misusing it. His head came off. But then it goes. Which I'm sorry is bad enough as it is. I'm sorry for this. V'nichnas harosh l'toch marat hamachpelah, which is obviously just a bizarre scene. Chopped off his head, and then his head starts rolling, and it rolls into Marat HaMachpelah. So the body of Esav, again, it's a big question, where to bury Esav? You realize this as well. So the body of Esav will be buried back by Har Seir, which is where he's supposed to go, but his head is buried in Marat HaMachpelah. Ma'asa Yitzchak achaz b'rosho. Yitzchak holds on to the head, and the term which is used in the Targum Yonatan that I mentioned earlier is that he takes Esav's head and he holds it in his bosom, the chiko. He holds it and he holds on to it. And so on and so forth. So according to this bizarre midrash, the head of Esav ends up in the Marat HaMachpelah. So let me ask you something. Excuse me?
In the arms of Yitzchak.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
It's interesting that doing this because he was doing that to Ishmael. You know, he's like
correct. That was part of exactly. That was part of what I had either mentioned or at least had implied last week. But this becomes very interesting because which part of Esav is given, shall we say, a more important burial, at least from our perspective, and Marat HaMachpelah, Abraham and Sarah, right, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah, and the head of Esav. No, I'm just saying that this description over here would lead me to the conclusion. Could the hands of Esav ever make it into the Marat HaMachpelah?
No.
No, the hands can't make it there. But it's interesting that his head does make it there. Which means that it sounds as if that there is some kind of a division, some type of a mechitza between the head of Esav and anything which is lower than the head, where the head perhaps can have Kedusha, while the rest of the body does not have Kedusha, and therefore can't make it. I mean, again, I think I've mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago this idea of wearing the tie. Right? I mentioned this?
No.
So they say that the Jews have to wear a gartel. Why? What's the idea of a gartel? To separate between what's perceived as being the manifestation of the Yetzer Hara and the heart. So you separate the Yetzer Hara, that's why you put a gartel on. So somebody once says, what about a tie? He says, no, businessman needs a tie, because he needs to have a mechitza between his brain and his heart, right? else he can't do good business if you don't have the mechitza over here. So over here, if you take this approach, Esav has the ultimate mechitza, right, between his heart and his head. They can't even be in the same place. So that again, that's why I'm asking, does he perhaps have good intentions? And I know that we already disagree, and that's it, there's nothing I can do about this, but why does his head deserve glory? Unless, and again, this may sound like a bizarre question, unless perhaps the words of Esav, the toll of Esav, is not as ominous and not as bad as you would have thought. But it's not, that's not the problem with Esav. Is the problem with Esav the words that he uses? Or the hefech? It could be the words that he uses actually have something positive to them. The problem with Esav is what he does, or are his actions. So over here, when he says, again, I want to go back to that Rashi, when he's deceitful with his words, I threw out the question, is he deceitful because he's trying to deceive his father, and he's saying things because he knows that his father will be fooled? Which, by the way, then makes Yitzchak somebody who can't read his own son. Or is it that he really means it? Well, what's it harder to tell, when somebody's lying to you and knows that they're lying to you, or when somebody says something and they really mean it? When somebody really means it, it's far more difficult. Correct? When your kid or your student or whatever the case is tells you, no, I will never do that again. And at that moment, they believe that we'll never do it again. That's far more difficult than when somebody says something that, when they're looking at you, they're not telling the truth. Yes? Let's hold on to that for a second, because as far as the losing the birthright and the deceit of Yaakov, whether there really is deceit there or not, I don't think that that's so simple. But let's try to go back. Oh, we're not going to be able to go back. Okay. Give me, yeah. No. One second. Let's be honest. Who's the bad person in the whole story? It's the woman. It's Rivka. Right?
No.
Right?
No. Because
she knew from the that. Oh, okay. So she is prophet. But she's the one who tells Yaakov to. By the way, according to the Midrash, when Yaakov goes in, his mother says, you have to go in. He says that he's crying and saying, how can I do such a thing? But nonetheless, there's two different stories. The one story is with the birthright, with buying or selling the birthright. I don't believe there's any deceit there whatsoever. Give me a couple seconds, we'll get back to that. The other episode is going in and taking the birthright, which his mother tells him to do. So it's interesting how you don't want to blame her at all, you always want to blame... Yes? Yeah. I think that's nice. I'm not convinced that's what Rashi says, because Rashi is saying that Yitzchak really believes that he medakdek the mitzvot was Esav medakdek. Meaning, do you think that Esav really?
We all believe that anyone who's so strict with the way they dress, although I think you're very medakdek the mitzvot, but we don't really know what to believe.
Okay. Okay.
We all like that. We all believe that someone who is really strict with
okay, I accept it. But going back to your first point is an excellent point. Anybody who reads through the Parsha notices that Yaakov looks far worse in reality, or in Pshat, than the Midrashim tell us, and Esav looks far better than he would seem. So if we really want to try to understand what the problem with Yaakov or Esav is, there is a lot more to say. I am not going to try to deal with that today, simply because I've dealt with it in other times, and you can see where in the Psukim you see it. But I do want to get to what I think is the main issue, and that's found in source number 4. Over here we find where Yaakov, these are the verses where Yitzchak says he's going to give a blessing, and Rivka hears it. Esav goes out hunting. Yaakov comes in. Here Yaakov is definitely deceitful. And by the way, when I said earlier, where do you really find deceit? You find that by Lavan. So then you have to wonder over here in terms of Rivka, who tells Yaakov to do this, is this, you know, coming from his mother's family? That God created the situation, God was the one who allowed me to come so quickly. So now, does that sound like Esav? At that point, the second that he says God was the one who helped me, he says, come here a second, let me see who you are. So, is it that he's concerned, is it that he doesn't recognize the voice, or is it the content of what is said, or the inflection of what is said? And it says here in Kafim, and he feels him, and he's, sorry, I skipped the pasuk. But you got pasuk kafet, but you gash Yaakov v'Yitzchak, Yaakov goes further, El Aviv v'Yimushehu, he feels him v'Yomer, Hakol kol Yaakov v'Adan Yidei Esav. The sound or the voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav. Now that line takes almost a life to itself. Because of course within the pshat over here, within the simple reading of the verse itself, it seems to be, the simple reading would seem to be, you feel like you're Esav, but you sound like you're Yaakov. Commentaries have gone on and on and on trying to figure out what this means, and in terms of theology, the implications of the call of Yaakov and the Yudayim of Esav, as I said, completely takes a life unto itself, and we'll try to get to some of that. I mean, you have to suspect, or you have to at least take into consideration, that Yitzchak knows something's going on. Why? Because he tells him, come here. Right? Something doesn't seem to make sense. It is interesting that, and I can go through quickly a dozen sources, but I'm just going to read a couple. 5. Kol Yaakov shemidaber b'loshem tachtunim. When he says a Kol Yaakov, he identifies the content. You speak of God. You speak of positive things, not the voice itself. Or source number 6. Later on, the Ramban writes, Ulai ha'yuachim ha'ele domim b'kolam. They really have the same voice. The Kachamur, a Kol Yaakov, v'rav shediver b'loshem raka, u'maskir shem shamayim. The idea of the voice of Yaakov is not literally that the voice is different from... Remember, first of all, they're brothers, and brothers sometimes sound the same, and secondly, they're twins. And again, all of these commentaries say the same thing, is that the voice is the same. The 8, Rabbeinu Bachai says, Akol kol Yaakov, Omer bin Gosho, Ein Yaakov shalit, Ella bikolo. So the whole idea of Yaakov is the kolo, Shinemar kol kol Yaakov, Ein Esav shalit, Ella biyadav, which again goes much closer to theology. That Yaakov is identified by the voice, by sound, while Esav is identified by the hands. Source number 9, Balei Tosfot. No, we'll skip 9, it's fine. Source number 10, I just say this because this way you can have something really short to say. But not one person here will be convinced by this. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, and he was apparently too clever. Because he says that Esav suspected that Yaakov would try to get the bracha. Why does he suspect this? Because last time Yaakov did what he could do to get to buy the birthright. So now when he's about to get the bracha, he suspects that Yaakov will try to come in and take it. So therefore, according to Beit Halevi, he says, this is Rabbi Yosef Del Salvejic's Beit Halevi, he says that Esav says to Yitzchak, I'm going to go hunting, but when I come back, I'm afraid Yaakov will come in, so I'm going to speak like Yaakov. You ready? I'm going to speak like Yaakov, because if Yaakov comes in and tries to imitate me, he's going to speak like Esav. So therefore, when he comes back, and he speaks like Yaakov, right, because it is Yaakov, Yitzchak is convinced that it's Esav, because he says, ah, Hakol Kol Yaakov, and Yadayim Yidei Esav. Is that the craziest thing you've heard today? He really says this. He really says this. Look at source 10 where it's underlined. V'yesh lo medigam b'tchilat nityara Esav mizeh, v'kod m'shalach mi'itzchak amar la'aviv, siman sh'yudah shehu Esav, sh'yishane kolo k'kolo sh'yakov, u'daber v'nachat k'yakov, u'laskir shem shemayim. V'zeu siman shehu Esav, The im yavo Yaakov lahatov hari mistama yishanel hu kolo shidimekol kolo esav. By the way, what's bothering the Beit Halevi in all this? And again, if you're not worried, I didn't translate it. I already told you what it says. If you're, what's he bothered? What's he bothered by? He's bothered by why would Yitzchak give the bracha if he knows it's kol Yaakov and yadayim shel esav? If at that point you say, hold it a second, I have a contradiction in information. Let me stop and try to figure out what's going on over here. You wouldn't just go proceed. Oh, kol kol Yaakov yadayim esav. Here's the bracha. Yeah.
The answer is what you suggested. That he's on for the whole thing, and he knows Esau is supposed to get the blessing, but he really also wants Yaakov to get it, so that he knows he's got Yaakov there, and he plays along with
it. Let me point out a couple of things. What's the first thing we see Yaakov doing in this world? Using his Yadayim and holding on to Esau. Again, Hakol Yaakov or Yadayim Shel Yaakov. Right? Using his hands. Think about this. When Yaakov is about to meet up with Esav many years later, or many parshiot later, in Vayishlach, and we have this famous wrestling scene between Yaakov and what's called by Rashi Sarosh Shel Esav. So here they're wrestling. He's using his Yadayim. And what does the Sarosh Shel Esav say? You got to let me go. Why do you have to let me go? Because I have to go and daven. Right? I have to go, that's what it says, that's what it says Rashi, I have to go and daven, which is very funny, because here you have Esav using the coal. My point is that this division between the coal and division between the hands are not as clear as we would like them to be, and there is something much, much deeper going on over here between the coal. What we just now have seen is that the coal itself of Yaakov and Esav is not as different as you would have thought. The coal itself seems to be a similar coal. Again, you go into the Gemara, the kol of Yaakov is tefillah. The kol of Yaakov is Torah. The kol of Yaakov is something which is spiritual. You look in the Gemara, the yadayim of Esav are hands which spill blood. It's hands which hold a sword. It's hands which cause war and hands which cause destruction. Okay, there's no mistake about it. The Yadayim of Esav and the Kol of Yaakov are these two separate things. But again, I do want to think about this a little bit deeper. What is the difference between the Kol and the difference between the Yadayim? The Yadayim are something which are external. The Kol is something which comes from inside. The voice is an expression of something which is inside. Even on a more physical level, the sound of the voice comes from the larynx, from the voice box. The air comes from inside. The voice, the words are something which are connected to the very spirituality of an individual. The ability to speak is considered to be something which is almost divine, the image of God. This idea of kol is something which is one of spirit. And on the other hand, the idea of the hands is the part which humans have absolutely in common with the animal. That the realm of Yaakov is primarily supposed to be the realm of the kol, of the voice, and the realm of Esav is the realm of the hands. That doesn't surprise us all that much. I do, however, think that there is something which is far deeper involved in this whole topic, which, before I get there, I just want to give you a sense of what, you know, some of the commentaries do with this idea of the coal, and do with this idea of even Esav, and for that matter, the mistake that Yitzchak makes. When I say Yitzchak makes a mistake from the beginning, look at source 16. This is the Gemara, which I said briefly outside before. Hakol kol Yaakov v'yadayim de'esav. Hakol ze Andrianus Kesar Shaharad ba'Alexandria shamatrayim shishim ribo al shishim ribo. Kiflayim kiyotze mitrayim. It's the sound of destruction, which is a very interesting thing. Kol Yaakov ze Aspainus Kesar Sharag v'chach betar, and so on. Yadayim de'esav zu malchut Edom shehichriva et beitenu v'sarfa et echalenu. That what is the hands of Esav It is this force that destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. Notice the similarity of the word Shehechriva with the word Cherev, sword. Davar Acher, Hakol Kol Yaakov, Ein Lecha Tfila Shemo Elet, She'ein Ba Mizaro Sheyaakov. That prayer that works comes from descendants of Yaakov. Vidayim De'esav, Ein Lecha Milchama She'notzachat, She'ein Ba Mizaro Shel Esav. That means it's basically giving you a division. Spirituality and physicality, connecting to God versus war and destruction. This is Yaakov, this is seen as Yaakov Esav. In fact, the Gemara goes a little bit further. At an earlier point, when Rivka gets her prophecy and told that you have twins inside, over there the Gemara tells us about a sort of a pendulum or a nadmeid. In English that would be a seesaw. That one has to go up and then the other one goes down, and you don't have a situation that they're both can be up at the same time. It's Yaakov or Esav in the world, and that's what it's described even before they're born. And that seems to be a similar concept to this kol and to the and to this yodayim. And that seems to be what the Gemara is telling us over here. This idea of Esav connected to the Cherev is actually not even in the Midrash, it's not even in the Gemara, it's in the Chumash itself. When Esav comes back after Yaakov has received the first bracha, what bracha does Yitzchak give to Esav in source 19, Vaya'in Yitzchak aviv v'yomer elav hinei mishmanei ha'aretz hiya moshavecha u'mital ha'shemayim me'al v'al charbecha tichye. You will live by the sword. Okay? I mean, as clear as you can possibly get. The Yodayim of Esav are understood by the man who uses those words as being associated to the Cherev. By the way, do you realize how interesting now it is when we go back to this Midrash that we saw about Esav using his words, and his words were able perhaps to fool Yitzchak. Who was not fooled by those words? Who? Chushim. Why is he called Chushim? Chush. It's Chush. It's Chushim is death. Chushim is... Exactly.
He's the opposite of Yitzchak.
Perfect. He's the opposite of Yitzchak, because Yitzchak can hear but he can't see, but Hushim can see but he can't hear. So this person,
and he can't speak.
So this whole idea of the kol is irrelevant to him, and he looks, and what does he see? He sees Esav. That's it. He sees Esav. Esav is making trouble. And then he uses a cherev. That's the word used over here. He uses the cherev and he kills Esav with the same cherev, which again, poetically, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword, but never was that as apt as this particular situation with Esav. So over here, you see Esav is somebody who's able to fool Yitzchak. He's able to use the words, and again, maybe the kol that he has is not all that different from the kol of Yaakov, even though we're told here that the kol of Yaakov ultimately has to be the kol of Torah, the kol of Tfilah, and it ultimately happens to be a kol which has spirituality. Now, if you really try to get to the core of what the problem with Esav is, when Esav is born, why is he called Esav? So what are we told about his birth? We're told that he's all hair. But what does the word Esav indicate? The name, what does it indicate? He's finished. Asui, he's done. He's done. Which means, Kuren, he's done already. Which is, you look at this child who already seems to be developed or overly developed, but the problem with being developed very quickly is that you may feel that you're more developed than anybody around you, and you don't need to go any further. You don't feel that there's any need to develop any further. Esav is called Esav. It seems to be that his self-perception as well is, that's it. There's no need for growth. There's no need to get to a different place. The thing about the Yadayim as well, as I said, that's something which is far more of what man has in common with the animal world, although it's interesting, the use of the cherev is the use of technology in order to be far more effective than the animals ever were at hurting one another. Which means it's taking the animalistic instincts and it's just taking it to a whole different level and to be able to harm one another. The Midrash, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And then cries out.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. No question. Esav uses his voice. And Yaakov uses his hands. Hold on. There is in source 21, this is the source called the Kometz HaMincha. It's a source by a Hasidic master, a tzaddik from Lublin. We've seen a tzaddik before. But Tzamek at the end over here quotes a midrash, which is interesting. He writes, Kemosha Amru Mbreshit Rabba Poshet Tlafav Kichazir Shehigir More Al HaMaaseh V'Siman Shanim Al HaGera Shehu Shlemut Achila Morel Al HaPnimiyut. If you're not getting this, it says that Esav is compared to the Chazir. Some of you may take offense at that, it does not sound all that nice, but Esav is seen as being the Chazir. In fact, even if you were to look up in the book called Malchei Elyon, which is an encyclopedia of angels, there is an angel called Chazriel, which is an angel which actually is a protector, or a demon perhaps, a protector of Esav. The idea of the Chazir, kosher animals have two simanim, have two signs of being kosher. What are they? One is they've split hooves, and the other is they chew their cud. What does a camel do? A camel chews its cud, but it doesn't have split hooves. A pig has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. Which means a pig, if you look at it from the outside, it looks as if it's kosher. You only have to look deep inside to realize why it's not. Over here, Rav Tzadik is saying, he's quoting the Midrash that Esav is compared to the Chazir, but his reason for this is that on an external level, it looks like it's kasher, but the problem is the pnimiyut. But by the way, if I go back to the problem, what I think exists with Esav's speech, I think when he says to his father, should we take ma'aser, I think he really means it. The problem is that there's some kind of a disconnection between the pnimiyut and between what comes out. Which means when it comes down to it, what we're learning is that his pet is kadosh, but the problem is the pnimiyut. The problem is what's really inside of Esav, and that's having a very great difficulty coming out. Yes? That's a very good question. Ultimately, we can't answer that, but my suspicion would be that Rivka felt that if God gave her this nevuah and did not give it to Yitzchak, then apparently she was meant to know this and not Yitzchak. Part of it goes back to what I said last week, and that Yitzchak's perception is a perfected world the way that things should be, and Rivka's perception is this world the way that things are. Rav Tzadok continues, however, if you look at the very top of page 4, and over here he's mixing his metaphors, so we're going to have to go back and see where this comes from. Ulakacha yidei hal iteni shehu siman tum'ad achila kmo she'amrizal pe'er piv kigamal hirish kamal mavakesha inu shalok. Okay, and leave that. What he's noticing over here is when Yaakov and Esav meet up, and as far, and I'm coming back to you, as far as Yaakov being deceitful when he tries to buy the birthright. Esav comes in from the field and says that he's tired, and Yaakov says, and he says, give me food. Actually, what words does he use when he says, gives me food? He uses the word haliteni. Haliteni is a very strange word. He doesn't say, bevakasha ten li ochel. He says, haliteni. Look at Rashi in source 24. Haliteni means eftach pi ushvoch harbe l'tocha v'moshe sheninu ein oksin et hagamal ela mal'itin oto. What Rashi is saying is that Esav comes in from the field and says, I am starving. Haliteni means pour food in my mouth the way that one would feed a camel. By the way, it's not a very nice way to eat. But it's interesting that Esav's self-perception is one of a camel. Chazal look at him as being a chazir. What is a chazir? It may look good on the outside, but it's not good on the inside. And what is a camel? A camel's the opposite. What is it? It's good. It's good. It's good on the inside, even though it doesn't look so good on the outside. So what is ace of self-perception? I may mess up. I may do bad things, but I'm really a good person inside. My heart is really good. I'm really good inside. And please forgive me for the way that I'm acting on the outside. But it's so interesting that these two animals do become associated with them. The Midrash touched this, and I don't know if you noticed this last week, in 22 in the verse where it says, "Vatisa rifkate nevet yiretz Yitzchak v'tipoma ala gamal." And she looks up and she sees Yitzchak and Rivka, and she falls off the gamal. Source 23, the Midrash says, "Amruma gamal zeh yesh po siman tuma v'siman tahara. Kach emid rifka tzadik v'rasha." That the gamal becomes the symbol of Yaakov and Esav, according to this Midrash, and that's why she falls off, because of the combination of Yaakov and Esav, one good siman and one bad siman. But again, it's interesting, because I think the self-perception of Esav is really the issue here. Yitzchak sees Esav on the outside, and sees it looking good, but on the inside it's corrupt. Esav sees himself, even though on the outside he's not doing what he should be doing by this point when he gets older, and he sails the Bechora. He says, on the inside, I know that I'm really a good person. And again, we've heard that, and we've seen this this movie before. What? Yeah.
That fits in with his question about the maser with the salt.
Because of the.
Because there, what is maser? You don't take maser from the salt, because there's no. You take the food. You don't. So, but he doesn't say do you. He says how do you. Mm-hmm. He says ask. So he's like, say, why do you take maser from something? Because you take the kedusha out of it and you align it. So it seems like he's saying, where's the kedusha? Is there kedusha? Where? How do you get the kedusha?
Correct.
Or something that seems like it has no kedusha in it.
Correct.
And he's referring to himself.
Correct. Correct.
He relates to himself. Absolutely.
And I do want to add one more thing. How does Esav himself relate to the birthright? After it's sold, what are the last three words over there? Vayivez, in source one, Vayivez Esav et Bechora. What does Vayivez mean? No, Vayivez, he despised it. Why does Esav despise the Bechora? Meaning, think of it this way. Why does Esav not want the Bechora? And you know what the normal answer you get if you went to yeshiva and they got to you? Right? What would they tell you? That Esav knew the Bechora would have to work in the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore he didn't want to work in the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore he hated the Bechora. Excuse me. Or Esav didn't believe in God, or Esav didn't believe this, or Esav didn't believe that. Choose any one of those things that you want. If Esav didn't believe in any of this, and Yaakov wants to... He has Yaakov as food, Esav as the Bechora. Esav doesn't value the Bechora whatsoever. Yaakov then says to him, you want the food? Give me the Bechora. What should Esav have said? You know, they say there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you can sell something, right, this is futures, a futures market. You can sell something that has no value for you whatsoever, then what should be the result afterwards? This should be amusing. You should laugh about this. Why is it, but why is there, but this, why, there's anger over here. He despises the Bechora. It's not just that he feels power to it. It's not just that he doesn't. Yeah.
But he despised it after he gave it away. And sometimes it's a rationale because he no longer has it, so he thinks of it as something to be despised.
Right, but it's interesting.
He doesn't have it.
Correct, but it's interesting. It's not power of. Could be it's afterwards, but now it's become something.
Well, this is something I didn't want anyway.
But
he's got it.
Good. And I think that there's something within those words that will really be able to, you know, take us much further. Yes?
Because of something that he despises after he gives it away. Before he gives it away, what do I need it? I don't need it. After he gives it away, he scorns the fact that he gave it away. Because then when he asks for the blessing, he says, look, I already lost my birthright, at least give me a blessing. He despises the fact that he doesn't have the Bechora.
Okay. We will have to...
Could he despise himself for momentary weakness?
That could be true as well. Okay, let's do a couple of things. We'll see how far we can get. First of all, the Shla HaKadosh, Rabbi Yeshayahu Horovitz, in source 26, The Inyan Yitzchak Titan Hit Pashtut Eitz Adat V'Tovara. I'm not going to explain all of this. Heim Yaakov Esav Noldut Omim. I'm thinking, by the way, of talking more about this next book. I haven't decided yet. When we get to the Sulam, there's a lot more to talk about, which just continues the same discussion. But Yitzchak wanted to fix the Eitz Adat Tovara and the Eitz Achayim, which is the same idea of Yaakov and Esav being born twins. Higam Harayi Tukan Kamosha Amru Chazal. And also, bad needs to be fixed and elevated, as Chazal say, Reisha de Esav Munach Ba'atifa de Yitzchak, as Chazal teach us in the Targum Yonatan, that the head of Esav is being held on by Yitzchak. So that Sod Hachzarat Harat Lemutav, that is the secret of elevating bad and turning it into something good. Visod Atid Chazir Li Taher, and that is the secret, the mystical secret, of one day the pig becoming kosher. Okay, I don't know if you ever heard this before, but if you're interested, there's just a, how interesting. Okay, I did once write an essay on this, and I collected all the sources on this. This one's done. There are a lot of rabbinic sources that speak about when Mashiach comes, the pig will then become kosher. Esav will come and do tshuva, but it's part of it is the siman of the pig and Esav. But this is what you just now read in the Shla, that the real objective of life is to take the bad and turn it into something good, not just to throw the bad away. The main objective is really to take the bad and to elevate the bad. And that's what it's saying, that's what Yitzchak really wanted to do. Sod Achzar Torah. Yishchot HaKadosh Baruch Malach HaMavit, Dehainu Bala HaMavit LeNetzach, Yisher Malach. He will kill the angel of death, but he'll become an angel, which becomes so just an interesting thing. But this goes back to this idea of the Chazir. Now, if you want to get, again, I'm only going to touch this just to bother you, and I'm not going to go into this deeply. You just want to touch how the Kabbalists, starting with the Arizal, understood the idea of Esav holding on, of Yitzchak holding on to the head of Esav. So there's a very simple explanation for it. And if you, again, just want to begin to understand how they think, Esav is a Jew, just like Yaakov is, right? Do we recognize that? Esav is a Jew just like Yaakov, but he becomes the prototypical non-Jew. He becomes the father of Edom, he becomes the father of Rome. They end up destroying the Beit HaMikdash. They live by the sword. Esav is the Jew who leaves Judaism, Yisrael Mumar. He's called the Jew who sins. So if you want to understand where Esav ends up and what this Kedusha that Yitzchak perceives, the Arizal who sees the world in terms of souls and in terms of reincarnations, he identifies somebody who you may not suspect as being the real Esav. Let's look quickly at Source 27, Sefer Mo'or Einayim. Mo'or Einayim is written by the Chernobyl Rebbe. This is the beginning of the Tversky dynasty, the Tolna dynasty. Ve'ita b'kitfei ha'arizal, and it's written in the writings of Arizal, Source 27, Sheitzchak ahavet Esav kitzai b'fiv. Ki nishmat Rabbi Akiva haita medaberet mipiv. What was coming out of the mouth of Esav? You saw it right there. It was the soul of Rabbi Akiva. Now, need I remind you that Rabbi Akiva is the son of converts? That Rabbi Akiva becomes this Jew who was non-Jewish and becomes a Jew, and therefore he sees over the Arizal sees this Esav leaving for him coming in. By the way, also recognize something else. The name Akiva is the same name as Yaakov. It's this alter ego to Yaakov is Akiva, but he's saying it's this alter ego of Yaakov, which is actually this Kedusha, which is within Esav, which means the call of Esav, which is Kadosh, is the call of Akiva, which is the call of Yaakov, which exists within side Esav. Yes? Midaber mipiv ki atak kulab b'kinat rosh shel Esav, v'tavin kol zeh ima shekatuv l'mala ki hu haya be'emet ra gamor, let me say a couple more things about this quickly. And sources 28, 20, 29, and 30 all go along these lines. Source 28, again, Rav Tzadok and the Pri Tzadok, the Mitzad Kavanatam HaKdusha, Nishar Alav Shem Yisrael Mumar, Kitzai Defiv, Yadu Me'arizah, Shehu Mitzad Nishmat Rabbi Akiva, Revi Rabbi Meir, who also converted, Yisodu Torah Shebal Peh. Skip a little bit, Elisha HaYarat, Safa ulachutz v'lo mimamkei halev ki libo malei ra v'hu b'rishuk libo l'mshoch acharei shirot libo neged etzak ha-sechel. So there you see black and white what he sees, the problem of Esav. The heart is bad, the mouth is good. Why is the mouth good? Because the mouth is one, the mouth of Rabbi Akiva. By the way, what's so interesting? Who has a better heart than Rabbi Akiva? Who's a person who speaks about love, who speaks about Haftarech HaMoch and so on, and exhibits more love than Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva's whole life is one of bringing together the heart and the words. So you understand, begin to see where their reason is going. By the way, any of you remember the story of Rabbi Akiva, how poor he was? That's Hillel. How poor? He was so poor that?
The straw.
What straw in Hebrew? Heaven. And what happens then? His wife says, look how poor we are. And then Eliyahu HaNavi comes. This is all in the Gemara. Eliyahu HaNavi comes and says, comes dressed as a poor man and says, my wife is about to give birth and she needs some tevin. And they give tevin as tzedakah. Giving tevin as tzedakah. Have you ever heard anybody giving tevin? By the way, another way of talking about tzedakah is giving ma'aser. So the idea of can you give ma'aser from tevin goes back as far as, you know, if you take the Arizal, goes back to Rabbi Akiva, actually fulfilling the mitzvah of giving tzedakah from the use of tevin. And I'm saying, if you want to get into the world of machshava, the world of Kabbalah, this is the way they see it in terms of the neshamot. But I prefer in the time that we have left today to get back to what I think is what we're all missing. And I want to say something which I think is much closer to pshat, and to try to figure out what really bothered Esav. And I think it goes back to this idea of the Bechora. Here's my question. For Esav, what does the Bechora include? Which means, what are the rights? What are the privileges? What are the responsibilities? And don't tell me right now that it'll work one day in the Beit HaMikdash. You know what? Maybe that's true. Maybe he knows that. Maybe he doesn't know it. What should he know as far as the rights and privileges in which would be as being the prime son? That's what it means to be the Bechor, to be the prime son, the number one son of Yitzchak and Rivka. What should that include within it? Well, what's the profile? And there's one more thing that we're missing, and that is the covenant that God made with Abraham. What does the covenant include? The covenant includes going down into exile. The covenant includes being a slave. It includes being an Eved for 400 years. If I'm not mistaken, that is exactly what he doesn't want. Esav is somebody, again, it's interesting, he uses the Yadayim, but he doesn't want to work that hard. You know what we can describe this as? This is really the path to Har Sinai. If you really want to talk about Kol Yaakov, the Kol Yaakov will have to manifest itself in Har Sinai. And hopefully we'll be able to get back to that before we end today. The call of Yaakov will have to take place by Har Sinai. But to get to Har Sinai, where do you have to go first? You don't go straight from Hebron to Har Sinai. Where do you go first? You have to go to Mitzrayim. The path to Har Sinai goes through Mitzrayim and has a long stopover. I don't think that he wants that. That is the concept of Yiridah L'Tzorech Aliyah. To go down in order to be able to come up. I don't think Esav wants any part of it, but it's for him, this is something which he detests. He does not want to work so hard. He's not the kind of person who respects the idea, no pain, no gain. You want to grow someplace. You want to become spiritually sensitive. First, you have to really, really work, and you have to see what it's like to be disenfranchised. You have to be taken advantage of, and then you can become pure and ready for Torah and Mitzvot. By the way, it's very interesting. The Jews go down to Egypt. What do they do when they're in Egypt? How do they get out of Egypt? It's the first thing we're told about the beginning of the redemption. The beginning of the redemption is they screamed out in prayer to God. Am Yisrael cry out, they pray. That is the Kol Yaakov. Then they travel along the way when they get out of Egypt. And they're about to get to Har Sinai when they are attacked along the way by whom? By Amalek. Now, I want. First of all, let's notice something that we completely skipped over and ignored the first time we read it. In source 20, without looking inside yet, when Esav came to stop the burial of Yaakov, See, it's interesting. He didn't want to work hard. He didn't want any, but he just wanted the reward at the end. When he started to come to stop the bearer, where was he coming from? Did you notice? Look back inside, because it's astounding. Kishabol the Marat Machpelah, Baileim Esav, from where? Mehar Chored. Where is he coming from? He's coming from Sinai. Which means Esav himself is not really willing to go down into Galut, but Esav himself is willing to stand outside of Chored and protect Har Sinai. Means the Jews are not going to go to Har Sinai. He gets upset the Jews are going to get the reward that's coming to them. When Am Yisrael, again, this is the prototype. The prototype of leaving Egypt is Yaakov leaving Egypt and being buried in Israel, and Esav is there to stop them. When Am Yisrael leave, again in the macro, when Am Yisrael leave, who's there to stop them? Amalek is to stop them. At which point do they stop them? They stop them right before Har Sinai, right before Chored. When they try to stop them, we're going to have a battle where they're going to use the Chereb, which becomes very interesting. Will it be Chored or will it be Chereb, which is the exact same word. It's also interesting that Chevron, the core of Chevron, is the idea of Chaver, the idea of friendship. But it's the same letters as Chereb. You can either have Chaverut, you put the letters in one order, you have friendship and unity, that's Chaver, or you can have Chereb, which is separates even within one person the head from the body. Am Yisrael travel down, are about to get to Har Sinai. Look at source 35. No, sorry, 35. Am Yisrael questioned God's existence because there wasn't water. That place that happens is called Rifidim. What does Rifidim mean? Look at source 36, then we'll go back to 35. Ein Rifidim ela rafu yedehem min haTorah. It's very interesting. Yedehim in a Torah. Because they didn't use their hands to study Torah. It's very strange to me why I use the word over hands, the word hands over here. But go back to source 35 again. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. Who's Yehoshua? He's the person who never leaves the tent of Moshe. He's the one who never stops studying and being at the foot of Moshe. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua b'char lenu anashim v'tzei lachem b'malek machar anochi nitzav arosh agava matelo kim yadi. Do you realize how many elements exist within this story which continue what we've been doing all day? What does Moshe do when he stands on the mountain? He's praying. This is Tefillah. This is Kol Yaakov. But how is Moshe praying? Moshe is praying by using his hands. Here you have a unity of Kol Yaakov and the Yadayim of Esav. And what happens when we have this unity? We go and we fight Amalek, and we beat them with the Chereb. We beat them with the sword. Which means for the Jews to be successful, we need the unification of the Kol Yaakov and the Yadayim Esav. And by the way, that's what Rivka understood from the beginning. And that's what Rivka tells Yaakov you need to do. And that's perhaps even what Yitzchak understands, that you need these things to come together, because otherwise, why would he give the bracha when he notices that it's Kol Yaakov and Yadayim of Esav, unless there's supposed to be a unity? And the Yadayim also need to have something which is spiritual, which is guiding them. This unification of the two is noticed, source 37, the Paradis Rimanim, Rav Moshe Mikor Devero, 16th century in Sfat. Imayot she dvarav tzodkim hem al koze lokeim be'er rajbi ze lashon ve'it bat kol misitra de amuda demtzei de ikri kol shofar hakol kol Yaakov ad kan b'shono. You need a perish ki al shema tefert nekra bat kol. You know what? I shouldn't have read that yet. That's the idea of the Kol Shofar, which is the manifestation of the Kol Yaakov. Hold that for a second. Beit Elokim, who also lived in the 16th century in Tzfat, he is the Mabit. He was one of the people who was actually argued with Rabbi Yosef Karo. Tfilat Moshe al Malek, v'yakashe irim Moshe yado v'gava Yisrael, v'mechilta, v'chi yado shamoshe migvert Yisrael. Does Moshe's hands make battle? Or yado shorta Malek? Does Moshe's hands defeat it? Ela kol zesher Moshe magviya et yadav, v'mala ha Yisrael mistaklen bo, maminim b'mi shapakadet Moshe v'asotkin. V'makom osed lehem yisim v'grot. Which means the hands of Moshe are spiritual, the hands of Moshe connect. Look at the next paragraph. Nizdareiz Moshe Rabbeinu, the next where it's underlined, the next part. Nizdareiz Moshe Rabbeinu b'shnei dvarim b'tfilah u'gvorot milchama. V'ta tfilato mochicha shinatzchu ba'asotah milchama lo tespik ha'tfilah b'mchot zer amalek b'liyah milchama v'zeh tzarech laharim yadov kidei she'adbir Yisrael. That to defeat Amalek, it's not enough just to pray. To defeat Amalek, you also need to use the hands. Which means to defeat Amalek, we're told over here, there needs to be on our part a unification of the hands and of the words, but it's really a unification of the spiritual and the physical. It's really unification of what's inside and what's outside. Which means it's a consistency. And that is what Yaakov ends up, and that's what the Mabit says over here. This idea of the idea of the Kol Yaakov eventually comes to its, we'll call it, ultimate fruition in Source 39. V'hi b'yom ha'shlishi b'yot ha'boka v'hi kolot uvrakim v'anan kaved alahar v'kol shofar chazak ma'od v'echrad kol ha'am asher b'machaneh v'yitzei Moshe et ha'am l'krat elokim min ha'machaneh v'yitzvu b'tachtit ha'har v'har sinai kolo ashan kolo b'pnei asher yirad alav Hashem v'esh v'yal ashano ke'esh ha'kibshan v'echrad kol ha'am ma'od. It's very interesting because a lot of the elements over here, in terms of the kol, in terms of the yechared, are similar elements to the bracha that Yitzchak is. The kol shofar, again, but not on a pshat level, certainly on a symbolic level, and that's the source I read before. The kol shofar is most definitely related to Yitzchak. The yi kol hashofar holeich b'chazek ma'od, Moshe yidaber v'lokim yaneinu b'kol. The idea of the Kol Yaakov finally being connected with Torah, really learning Torah, comes out by Har Sinai. But it's interesting because the element of the Kol over here is also this element of the continuation of the Kol of Yitzchak, which is the Kol of Shofar. And it's also interesting that what are we told what happens afterwards? The Kol Ha'am Ro'im Et HaKolot. And now all the people are able to see the Kolot, while Yitzchak, when he was giving the bracha to Esav, at that point Yitzchak was not able to see. Yitzchak was only able to hear.
And you have this conflict with the physical and spiritual, when you see the Kolot, where there are the divisions between the physical.
Correct. Which means ultimately receiving the Torah means a total unified person whose physical and spiritual come together. And that's why it means that when they receive the Torah, anybody who was sick was no longer sick. By the way, do you know that midrash? Have you ever wondered why there's so many hospitals called Har Sinai Hospital, Mount Sinai Hospital? Because there's a midrash that at Sinai, all people became healed. Right? That's why, in case you never realized this. But that's the exact same thing. Is that at Sinai, there's a total unification of the physical and the spiritual, what's outward and what's inward. And all of this goes back to the Kol of Yaakov and the Yadayim Esav, but they become together. So what's interesting for us, what's interesting to us is Yitzchak gives a bracha. When he gives a bracha, he speaks of the Kol Yaakov Yadayim of Esav. Ultimately, maybe we'll take one more step. Where do we see the unification of the hands and of tefillah? Ultimately, this becomes in Birkat Kohanim. Ultimately, it comes in Birkat Kohanim, where there is a lifting of the hands, and the bracha then is supposed to flow from the lifting of the hands. Which means you can lift your hands to fight, or you can lift your hands to bless. There's a very strange gematria, that Esav in gematria is shalom, is peace. It's true. Esav in gematria is shalom, the same letters. Esav comes the same gematria as shalom. By the way, Chushim is spelled in the Chumash without a Vav. Chushim is the same letters as Mashiach. Which means the time of Mashiach is the time when we work on a different level and we no longer pay attention to all of the static and all of the words, the empty words of Esav, and there's this ability of separating, you know, those words, what's Kadosh from what's not Kadosh, and that ultimately is part of the battle of Mashiach. But when that actually takes place, then we can get to this idea of Shalom. But the idea of Shalom is not a rejection of the Yadayim of Esav. What it really is, it's a synthesis. It's a taking from Esav, the Yadayim of Esav. And that's ultimately what Rivka is saying. Ultimately, Rivka's point is to take this away from Esav, but to unify. It means the problem of Esav was that he was not prepared to be an Eved. He was not prepared to work hard. He wasn't prepared to go into Galut. He wasn't prepared to be a slave. Yaakov, on the other hand, what's the beautiful vision that he sees? He sees a Sulam. He sees going up and coming down and going up and coming down, and he realizes, as the old saying goes, right, whatever goes up must come down, but whatever goes down is going to go up. And he sees the Malachim going up, going, it's actually going down and going up. It's interesting. He sees the Malachim, he realizes that to get high, you have to start low, and he's willing to go down into Galut. He's willing to take, really, the mission of Avraham, and he's willing to try to bring these things together. Esav can talk. See, Esav has the call of Yaakov. He's able to talk like Yaakov. The problem is he's not able to do it. You know what the real problem with Esav? It's not the call. It's not the call. What's the problem with Esav? It's that he is the Yadayim of Esav and not the Yadayim of Yaakov. Yaakov is willing to bring the two together. He's willing to try to bring the two together, willing to use his physical strength in order to reach out to God, in order to turn to something which is spiritual, and Esav is not, he feels that he's complete. He feels he doesn't need it. And he hates this idea of responsibility. He hates this idea that he may not be considered to be complete. He hates the idea that he'll have that he is expected to go down and to be a slave and work on himself and be subservient to someone else and then go to Har Sinai. But what's he willing to do? He's willing to take a shortcut. What's the shortcut? Go straight to Chorev. Go straight to Chorev. But instead, he becomes a man of the cherev. He becomes a man of the sword. He's not a man who's willing or is able to really accept the Torah at Chorev. Of course, to accept the Torah at Chorev, what do you need? You need a real call, but the kind of a call which is unified. And therefore, the last step that the Jews have before they get to Chorev is this battle against Amalek. And in this battle, we use the cherev, but here we see beautifully the hands of Moshe representing the tefillah on the one hand, and representing the fight on the other hand. Here Yehoshua, who never leaves Moshe's tent, the man who always sits at Moshe's feet to learn Torah, never stops learning Torah, he's able to take the cherev. Because he's a man who is complete. He's a man who, his inner and his outer are the same. In terms of, he's holistic, if you will. There is no division within his personality. The tragedy of Esav, I believe, is not that he was deceitful on purpose. The tragedy of Esav is that he uses these words and he says the right words, but he just doesn't have the gut to go and follow through on it. And again, this understanding of the Arizal, that one day the good of Esav, and I have to stress that, the good of Esav is somehow separated, and what Yitzchak had seen all along was this positive part of Esav, which one day comes back as Rabbi Akiva, who's able to once again to completely unite together the heart and the words, the inner and the outer, which was something which Esav wasn't able to do. But again, this image at the end of the day of Yitzchak Avinu laying in Gan Eden or laying wherever he is in Hebron and holding on to the head of Esav is such a bizarre image. But nonetheless, Chazal see that there was Kedusha there. The question is, what is that Kedusha? Is it the Kedusha of the words? Is it the Kedusha, again, of the Neshama, the Neshama of Rabbi Akiva? There is something there that we need to take and we need to learn and we need to unify and to live by. And that seems to be the final step before we get to Har Sinai.
Can you clarify about what is the Eshwan 15?
The bracha that he gets in Yitzchak is able to use the Cheren. The question is, the primary question, were they ever brachot or were they prophecies? That's really the primary question. Okay, ladies, have a good Shabbat.
Thank you.